This is Hometown Heroes. Honoring the men and women whose service and sacrifice have secured our freedom. Now, the host of Hometown Heroes, Paul Leffler.
Welcome to another edition of Hometown Heroes, the show where each time we take a trip back in time as we listen to stories from our greatest generation. We want to honor our veterans for their service and sacrifice, preserve their stories so they're not forgotten. And along the way, I think we glean those little nuggets of inspiration and education that prove so plentiful when we look back through the lens of history. Our guest today is celebrating his 89th birthday, Don Straub of Windsor, Colorado. That's just outside of Fort Collins, home of Colorado State University. But back on January 18th, 1925, it was snowy Pennsylvania where he was born. Allegheny, to be exact, part of the Pittsburgh area. And Don, what was life like growing up there in Pittsburgh during the Great Depression?
Not much to do except play ball in the streets, didn't have any activities, never left the city limits.
Were you from a big family, a small family?
A small family. I had a brother who played ball also here in Fort Collins.
Yeah, and your name around Fort Collins is one that people know. They might know you as Lefty. We're going to get into some of those post-war exploits with the Rams here in Fort Collins. Don is in their Hall of Fame. But growing up in Pittsburgh, you said playing ball a lot, and then that changed when the war came along. I like to ask every veteran about December 7th, 1941, because everybody seems to have a story of how he found out that Pearl Harbor had been attacked. What do you remember about that day?
Went to church. Excuse me. And I came home, and that's when the announcement was on the radio. And my dad turned to me and says, "You won't be here next year at this time." And I didn't think anything about it. Well, it was a little longer than that. But that was my December 7th greeting, was when my dad said, "I don't think you'll be here next year."
Yeah, that would get your attention as a 16 going on 17-year-old to even think about that. And was your brother older or younger?
He was younger. He ended up out here in school. In fact, he was out here to play basketball and never did, and played quarterback. So he was a quarterback at Colorado State U years ago when it was A&M in those days.
With those nice orange uniforms?
Oh, yes. We used to kid each other about the pumpkin and alfalfa. Yeah, that was the colors.
We'll get to that in a little bit. So your father, I guess, kind of put that thought in your head early. A lot of guys I talk to say when that happened, you know, it was a shock, but they didn't realize they were going to be part of this. It sounds like you knew right there and then that this might be part of your future.
That's very true, but my mom didn't want me to go. I wanted to go. I went into V5 pilot training, but she wouldn't sign the papers until I graduated from high school, and that's when I went in after my graduation. Got into that and spent maybe 6-7 months. A lot of pilots, and I didn't quite make it. So I ended up in aviation radio gunnery school.
And what made you choose that program, the V5 program, and wanting to be a Navy pilot? Were you hoping to control your own destiny and not be subject to the draft when you decided on your own to go in? Or, you know, had you flown before? Did you have some dreams of flying? Where did that come from?
No, I didn't fly before. I was never in an airplane before. All I know is that I wanted to fly and go after the enemy. And that's just the way it was. Everybody wanted to get in and fly. And so that's why I went to the V5 and was able to get through it, but didn't quite make it.
And I've talked to a lot of guys. In fact, you know, all the guys that joined the U.S. Army Air Corps at that time, every single one of them wanted to be a pilot, whether they ended up a navigator or a bombardier or whatever. And I imagine with what you did too, a lot of guys that did what you did in the Navy wanted to be pilots. And some of the guys have shared that it was really devastating when they didn't make that cut or they didn't get to fulfill those flying dreams as a pilot. How did you handle it when they told you, you know what, you're still going to be in the air, but you're not flying the plane?
I was brokenhearted. I really disappointed. But I figured, well, if I'm going to get in the air somewhere, I'm going to be able to go someplace where I can learn and join some squadron. So I went to aviation radio school in Memphis, Tennessee. And then after graduation, went to California, San Diego, went to gunnery school. And that's when I got into the squadron that we were in.
And this was a squadron, not of the plane that you eventually flew most of your missions in, but this is in an SBD Dauntless dive bomber where you sit facing the back of the plane and fire out while your whole body's moving the other way?
That's right. Your back was to the pilot. You had twin 30 caliber machine guns sitting there. I don't know what they were going to knock down, but they looked pretty powerful at that time. But one thing about that SBD it had that the other dive bomber didn't have was dual control. And if there's any possibility of you getting back to your aircraft carrier, you had a chance to ditch it for him in case your pilot was shot up. But the other SB2C Cutlass that they replaced it with wasn't the same airplane. That Dauntless was up. That took us through Coral Sea and the Midway. That was the big airplane that did it all.
Exactly. I've talked to a guy who did exactly what you did on SBDs off of the Big E, the Enterprise at Midway. So what was it like taking off from those carriers, landing on those carriers? Can you give us a sense of what that feels like? Because I imagine some of those thrill rides that people pay big money to go on have nothing on that.
You know, you have no idea what it's going to be like, but I can remember the first time we did some practice landings on the carrier. And the minute the pilot cut back on the engine and laid it out, the whole bottom of the plane was going to come out. But you had to put your trust into that guy, and you did. And they did the job for you. It is a little scary, but not many people get to do it. And I thought, boy, I've accomplished something riding in the back seat.
And was it your expectation that you were going to head out on a carrier and fly some missions in those?
That's what it was, but they kept delaying. Then they replaced the squadron with this SB2C Cutlass dive bomber. And I thought, no, I decided I was going to look around somewhere else, and bumped into another Navy guy who said they're reforming a new squadron of B-24s and maybe you could get transferred. And then from San Diego, I went to Camp Kearney, and that was when they're reforming again the VPB-109. It was a modified B-24, which they took the belly turret out, put two top turrets in, and we were strictly low altitude, but with shipping, radar stations, communication centers. That's what we did, and we traveled the Pacific quite a bit.
Were you guys hunting for submarines a little bit too?
Well, we were looking for everything. Transports, destroyers. We were nailed a couple of times by fighters. We were able to shoot some of those down. But we had traveled quite a bit of there. We'd go for 14, 15 hours flying time out there because we were stationed. I was in the Philippines, Iwo Jima, and Okinawa. And we flew off of those strips. Down in the Philippines, we'd fly into Borneo, Shanghai, a lot of island hopping around. The plane was a sturdy, sturdy airplane. A lot of times we come back with AK-AK shot and destroyed the propeller. One time we lost the propeller on the darn thing, but we got back.
Well, I want to talk to you about some of those missions. But first, if you can recall, I know it's a long time ago, you went overseas as a teenager. Was it 44 when you went over?
February of 44.
So you're just past your 19th birthday, and here you are going a world away from your whole family. What do you think was going through your mind when you left Honolulu and went toward the Philippines?
You don't even think about those things until you make that first mission run. You get a little activity, or there's been a fatal accident somewhere, but you don't realize until the enemy is shooting at you. And then you realize, hey, I can get killed out here. And that was what happens when you're thinking about things. But that's never thought about it, flying, getting out there, stopping at the various islands to get there, Kwajalein, Eniwetok, and you don't think until you make that first run. And that's when you say, hey, I hope I get back okay.
Well, and I want to hear about that first one, but I also want you to describe for us your position on the aircraft. And you mentioned it's a converted B-24. The Navy called it a PB-4Y2, is that right?
Privateer. The Liberator was the regular Army B-24. The Navy remodeled it, redesigned it, and we call it the PB-4Y2 Privateer. My position was the radio shack, or the radio compartment, and that turret, the front turret, upper deck turret, I was responsible for that. We had a tail gunner, a bow gunner, and two blister turrets on each side of the airplane, which it was able to extend down to where the two 50 caliber machine guns crossed each other. They gave us protection from underneath. That was the way the things went out there.
But the turret that you operated was right on top of the aircraft and probably didn't quite go 360 degrees because you didn't want to shoot your own tail out?
Funny you should bring that up. My wife said to me when she saw the SBD down in Pensacola, she says, How did you not shoot your tail out? Well, it automatically cuts off. Yeah. There are sensors that cut it off. But you're primarily shooting from the sides most of the time. You had a tail turret back there who would take care of things coming up on the back. All in all, I would say we had more firepower than what the old B-24 had. We were strictly low altitude. We were 100 feet, 200 feet off of the water because we were looking for supply ships oil tankers. We got jumped a few times. We got jumped out of Truck Harbor one night. We flew into there just to see what was going on, and we got jumped by a couple of Zeeks over there and got back okay. But we knocked down a few. We knocked down a couple of Jakes, which was a seaplane, and we knocked down a Roof, which was a land plane. But we had a great squadron. We had a lot of great citations. It was a good outfit.
So you were flying basically every 2-3 days?
Exactly. You were going about every 2 or 3 days is right.
Were you able to keep the same crew together, or were you working with a variety of crews?
We kept our same crew. There was a couple of guys that moved on to another crew, but for the main purpose of it, we kept our crew. We all stayed together.
You must have been pretty close then. You must have had a lot of trust for your pilot and the other guys on that plane.
Oh, yeah. We had a great pilot. He was a great instrument pilot, but he got us back safe. It was very good. There was three pilots aboard. There was a PPC, which is the head guy, and a co-pilot, and the other co-pilot was a navigator. That was the three officers that we had. The rest of us were assigned to the radar gear, the radio gear, or the turrets in the back. They controlled that.
You talked about getting jumped by enemy planes. What happens inside of you when you realize that's happening and that your entire crew's life or death might depend on how accurate you are, if it's your gun that's needed to shoot that enemy plane down?
You had communications all the time. You could talk back and forth where they were coming from, what position they were in, and you covered your position by listening to the other fellows as we worked together. And we were lucky that we didn't get it. We got shot up a couple times. We had some damage from the fighters, but most of the time we could coordinate things pretty much together. And being low, they couldn't get under us. So they were all coming from topside or front and back, aft and fore. So that's how we kept things going pretty safely. We had some accidents. We lost a crewman in the Philippines on a bombing run he was on. The shell off of the ship exploded, and he was in the top turret when it hit him. That was our first casualty.
That was on your aircraft?
No, it was on another aircraft. That really opened your eyes up that you were out in a very bad area. And then we lost a pilot. Same way, he was flying up the Yangtze River, and the Ak-Ak hit the side of the plane, and unfortunately, he didn't make it. And not to conclude this thing, but I want to get to the bomb drop. We were at Okinawa when that happened, and August the 6th is when they dropped the bomb on Hiroshima. We lost a full crew airplane August 5th. If it had just been one day before, we might not have lost that crew, but we lost the full crew and a plane.
In other words, they wouldn't have had the need to fly the mission that got him killed.
When we heard about this thing, everybody looked at it. What the heck kind of a bomb could that be? Wipe out a sea? No way. We didn't believe it. And then we were told, stand down. Let's not do any patrols until we find out. We found out more about it, and we cut back. We were still going out, but we cut back. But we never saw any more action after that bomb was dropped.
Well, and you hit on that. You're flying 100 to 200 feet off the ground, and you talk about AK-AK, that anti-aircraft fire. You're awfully close to those guns on those ships and on the ground. Did you feel like you were doing dangerous work?
Oh, yeah. We could see the flashes. We could see it all. Primarily, we would fly one other crew. So a lot of times, we went out solo.
So just one or two planes instead of dozens of bombers in formation.
Completely different than what was in the European theater. They were high altitude, and we were strictly. That's why they developed this B-24, so the Navy could use it for long runs, long distances, to be able to knock out their communications, their transportation, the bridges, railroad cars. We had a good time up in Korea. A lot of people don't realize that we bombed Korea. We flew into Korea and knocked out a bridge and a railroad train and a few other things that we did in Korea. Not a lot of people know that. I get a lot of questions, but you bombed Korea? Yeah, we did, because the Japanese had it. We had to be very careful if you got shot down which Korean you were going to go to, because there were certain ones that you didn't want to get in contact with to get you back alive.
Were you afraid that you would get shot down? Did you allow yourself to think about those kind of possibilities, that you could be killed or captured in the work you were doing?
It really never entered my mind that we would get shot down. You always think you're going to come back. That's the way it was. If you got shot down, it was too bad. But you knew it could happen. It could happen. But we were fortunate we didn't. We come back.
Yes, you did, and we're thankful for that. When we come back with more of Hometown Heroes, we'll dive further into Don Straub's experience aboard those PB-4Y-2 privateers in the Pacific during World War II, and we'll find out how he came to be a star athlete at what was then Colorado A&M. Hometown Heroes will be right back after this. If you are a World War II veteran and you have not been to the World War II Memorial in Washington, D.C., Honor Flight wants to take you there, free of charge. The sooner you submit an application, the sooner Honor Flight can get you to your memorial. In Kern County or the Central Coast, call Lily Marsh at 661-544-VETS. That's 661-544-VETS. Or go to honorflightkernCounty.org. For Fresno, Madera, Merced, Mariposa, Kings, or Tulare counties, check out CV Honor Flight, CV as in Central Valley, CVHonorFlight.org, or call Al Perry at 559-970-9853. That's 559-970-9853. Maybe you're the son or daughter of a veteran and you'd like to go along as a guardian. There are applications for that too, and there are other ways you can help. Donations to Honor Flight are tax deductible. We all owe our freedom and liberty to the men and women who put their lives on the line for it. Let's all come together now behind Honor Flight and give our veterans one more tour with honor.